Right, here we go. The beginning of a journey, I suppose. This is easily the world's greatest gaming podcast.
World's greatest gaming podcast.
Yes. Is that the name we're going with for now?
I got a couple options, yeah. I got a couple options written down. I was thinking like ethical gaming podcast.
Oh, but don't you have to be ethical too?
No. It's cynically ethical.
Cynically ethical. Okay, brilliant. Yeah, so I guess the vibe is we like to talk about games, and so let's share that conversation with other people who like to listen to games. And so, yeah, this is easily the world's best gaming podcast and cynically ethical podcast. And yeah, we're going to chat about all the stuff we dig about games. My name is Gareth Woods. I'm a South African gamer. I've been gaming for as long as I can remember, back Atari days, man, like wooden inlay consoles, sure. 40 different varieties of Pong, which they would call soccer, or they'd call racing games, but essentially it was the same damn stick, avoiding or hitting a cube. That was the major gameplay premise. Yourself, Tim?
Yeah, no, I think my earliest gaming memory must have been, my uncle brought out his old Atari when I was like 4, and so I played some Space Invaders on that. For those who know, I'm Tim Lester. I've been gaming for most of my life. Met Gareth Woods through some work we did on Expresso Show. And yeah, I've kind of been doing video work, videography, and gaming whenever I can.
Yeah, what are you playing at the moment?
The moment I'm playing Resident Evil 2, trying to work my way through that slowly. I got to do it in like kind of small batches because my heart can only handle so much.
Did you play the original?
I did play the original 1 and 2. Reminded me a lot of like Alone in the Dark. Like I played those ones as well. It's kind of very similar vibe. And then I skipped a few of the titles and I jumped in again on RE5, and it was a very different experience. A lot more like action-packed. A lot more
turned into action games, I want to say like RE4. And that's ironically when I jumped in. So I thought, oh, that's what Resident Evil games are. They were these sort of like over-the-shoulder action game. And then when I suddenly played the HD remake of RE1, was just like, what is this game? It's completely different. The biggest baddie you have to fight is the damn camera.
Yeah.
which everyone says is like, wow, RE2, they removed the hardest obstacle, the camera, like out of all the fights.
Yeah, no, I really like that the series has kind of gone back to its traditional sort of horror roots. They sort of started that with the Res 7. Sort of like re-envisioning the franchise, and now with these remakes, I just think Capcom's on like a really good trajectory when it comes to those sort of like classic titles that they have under their belt.
I think what they've done well is you felt like they were following a trend. So RE4 changed the action pact, and then 5, 6, 7, 8, they try to make it something that seemed mainstream popular, which is like people want action zombie games.
They do.
And so let's turn RE, instead of making a new IP, let's like try and turn RE into those games. And while it might have made sense from a marketing perspective in terms of like, we've seen that action games sell better than horror games, so let's make an action game, it's not what the fans wanted. It's not what made RE special in the first place. And it kind of goes to this whole argument that's happening with like games like Sekiro and From Software's games, where people are going, it needs to be inclusive and it needs to be for everyone. And they're having this accessibility fight.
Yeah.
And I hear people when they talk about accessibility, like if your game is not accessible because whatever, it's not colorblind mode friendly, or it doesn't have like inputs for some of the accessibility controllers, you know, like that Xbox has. I get that, but the games are accessible. You can play like Bloodborne and you can play Dark Souls. They are just difficult.
Yeah.
And so, where's the line with that? Like accessibility actually meaning I want my hand held through the process because, you know, I want to play every game.
Look, the different sides to the arguments. Like, I'm actually playing RE2 now on assisted mode, which is basically like the easy mode for RE2, which I think gives you a few more hit points, and I'm just finding a bit more ammo and resources.
Why do they call it assisted mode as opposed to like easy, or?
I don't know. I think it comes back to this connotation around easy mode, as though it's something seen as less than. You see, like a lot of
like
other
for
games,
children, yeah.
Exactly. A lot of other games that are, you know, have been coming out in recent memory, they like to give, you know, these titles to their different modes.
Yeah.
Like in Witcher 3, it was like Blood and Broken Bones, Death March. You know, story mode.
Give me God of War.
Yeah. Right. So it's one of those kinds of things. It's just kind of rebranding that difficulty system, so it doesn't have the same connotation as you know, easy mode, yeah, or like handhold mode.
Have you noticed a lot of games have, I think they call it like cinematic mode, where it's almost like there's almost no tension. It's just yeah. like you just get to play through this. I think the first one I saw was Uncharted 4.
Sure.
I think it had cinematic mode, or whatever they called, story mode. And it's essentially you'll go, basically, you'll do all the traversing, but you'll go cutscene to cutscene, none of the like combat.
Oh, really?
Because I guess they see the combat as like a difficulty barrier that a lot of people
shame.
Like.
And I mean, the combat, I find the combat fun in those.
Yeah, I find the combat, to be honest, like a little bit cheesy, because the bad guys always spawn in the same spot. So you kind of had that almost Groundhog Day intelligence of a map where you go, okay, duck, duck, oh, I got blasted by a grenade. Okay, duck, duck, jump the grenade, move to the left, oh, I get shot. Okay, jump, jump, duck the grenade, move right. And then eventually just like, feels like you're playing Dawson's Revolution more than you actually, you know, fighting waves and waves of baddies.
Yeah, I think one of the big sort of like topics of discussion that comes up around game difficulty, like I think what one of the people tweeted was, you know, flip, I sort of lost it there. Their tweeted was like, if the player is struggling, then if they're not struggling, they're not going to learn anything.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, if another player has a different experience to you, how does that impact your experience?
That's the one thing that kind of got me hearing what people are saying. Because I, at first, was one of those like, get good, you know, bastions of elitism thing. And it sucks because I don't want gaming to be that. I want gaming to be as many people enjoy it as possible.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, I'm kind of on the fence. I probably sit still on the side of, if it's your game, you should design it however you want. That's basically where I'm probably going to end up in the argument. But I do hear the idea of, for a lot of people, they want to experience this game, and if you put it in an easy mode, how does it affect, like, heck, if it's about the trophies, block the trophies for anyone who goes on easy mode.
Yeah.
Like, I think, what is it? Cuphead did it quite well, where they had, you had the normal mode, and for you to progress further in the game, you had to beat the bad guys at normal mode. If you took the easy mode, you got to experience the whole fight and all that, and it was a little bit easier. I think you got more hit points or fewer projectiles you had to dodge.
Yeah.
But you didn't get to go to the next level until you beat it on normal. And for me, that's like, okay, cool. Like, let people experience the game. But if you want to, you know, see all of it, then you need to get good. And so I think there's like a bit of a balance thing. But some of the arguments that I've heard counter it are going, not all games are for everyone.
Yeah, you know,
like
totally.
If you don't... You know, there's certain foods, there's certain music, there's certain movies where we don't have to, I don't want to use the term dumb it down, but we don't have to make it for everyone.
Yeah, you can say that From Software might be reducing their potential player base by creating a certain experience, but at the same time, that specific experience is their artistic vision, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In the same way that a game like Horizon Zero Dawn having a story mode, that's part of their creative vision.
Yeah.
You know, the variety of modes that they put in there, the variety of, you know, difficulty scaling is part of their artistic vision too, because they want that experience to reach that audience on that side. From Software, not necessarily. Me, I'm playing through Res 2 on assisted mode because, like, I tend to have anxiety sometimes. It's a highly stressful game.
It is.
I had kind of a window to play it because I borrowed it from a friend, so I need to kind of like get through it quickly. And it's a stressful experience whenever I put it on, right? Like, you're kind of like walking around every corner like really slowly and, you know, kind of flailing my torch around when I walk into a room. And no, exactly. And the thing is, I wanted to have an experience that would be like, okay, it's stressful from start to finish. Here's how you can do it in a way that is helpful.
Yeah, single playthrough, not having to get stuck on a checkpoint over and over and over. I hear you. I think for me, one of the other things with the difficulty is, and you mentioned it with like, it's part of the game.
Yeah.
Games that add extra difficulty modes that feel arbitrary in terms of like beefing up numbers, those also like, it just feels like it's not really, you know, you take a From Software game and you go, okay, cool, we're going to make it easy. Easier at least. How do you do that? I mean, like in a real way.
Yeah.
If you just go, okay, cool. Character now does double damage, here has double HP, enemies have half HP and do half damage. Isn't that just arbitrary? That's just like math. You haven't changed the core mechanic of the game, which is the fact that like you need to dodge and parry and...
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the gameplay experience is, in From Software games, is baked into their, you know, their core mechanics. Mm. And if you... Like, I just don't think the game would work with a variety of game modes. Where enemies die in one hit, like the game would change completely. You'd probably ignore half of the tools the game gives you to work with in Sekiro, for instance.
Because guys have shown how you can cheese a lot of the bosses.
Yeah, totally.
Because they're like, it's almost like unlocking a door. If you use the right keys, it's fine. If you're sitting there trying to, knock the door down yourself, it's going to be difficult. But if you have the key, it's as simple as,
Yeah, and when I was doing my first Bloodborne playthrough, and this comes back to me feeling a bit uncomfortable with stressful games, and that game is stressful from start to finish, and it does not have an easy mode. But I managed to figure out those cheese modes, those tricks
to
cheese
those
bosses
easier.
And figure them out.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose, part of the game. I mean, you can, I suppose, arbitrarily add difficulty for yourself by going, I'm not going to cheese, I'm going to do it legit, in terms of mono, fight the guy. But I mean, I'm a big proponent of if you can do it in the game and you're not using a cheat code or a third party hack or an exploit, then it's part of the game. It's meant to be that boss's weakness.
In a lot of current games that I played in the last couple of years, with these open world sort of RPG systems, game progression, you tend to accrue tools and power level when you get to a point where you feel like you can take on any challenge that comes your way and you feel really powerful, right? Now, how do you balance that in a game where the underlying core mechanic is to make you feel uncomfortable
all the time?
Like RE2, you feel uncomfortable in that game. You don't feel comfortable
when
you walk
fully
through the door.
Kitted out, bazookas exactly. And everything. I've got one bazooka shell, and after that, I'm weak as tissue paper as normal.
Exactly. Or a game like Sekiro, where you come around a corner and there's a big encounter, and you're figuring out how am I going to go about this.
Yeah.
It does not feel comfortable, even when you think you do have the controls and the tools at your disposal. How do you balance that against, let's say, an easy mode that invariably will make you feel comfortable because you're like, I'm on easy mode, I can just handle this.
What is interesting as well is that they removed the third-party assistance that you had in previous Souls games. So I don't know if you remember in Bloodborne and Dark Souls, you could call in people
a mate,
help or potentially wreck you, help or help you die. but you brought people in. And what is interesting was the amount of people who commented, I played Dark Souls and I played Bloodborne and Sekiro is way more difficult. And you go, someone commented that it's probably because they got assisted through a lot of the bosses.
Yeah.
And you go, that's 100% why it is.
Yeah.
Because these games, they had a way of getting out. And if I think back, I'm going back to go play Bloodborne, Sekiro. Because there are three bosses in particular that I still have this bad feeling.
Because you haven't done it yourself.
Because I didn't do it myself. Because I had someone help me get through it.
Was it a hollow victory?
100%. They are completely hollow victories, pun intended, that I didn't finish the game.
Yeah.
Where Sekiro, you have to... You know what it is? You get stuck on a boss enough times, and like you said, I just want to get through this. It's stressful. You get stuck through it the 10th time, you're like, screw it. I'm going to get someone else to come help me. Now you've got... Sekiro, where you have a situation where I got stuck on that last boss probably 35, 37 times, I think was my last count. But when you get through it, it's proper pop up off the chair, fist pump. My kid and my wife were sleeping, so I couldn't really make any noise. So it was this weird silent scream sort of thing. But it was the most amazing experience. And I know that if I had the ability to call someone to help, it wouldn't have got to 34 times. I would have called someone in after 5, 10 times going, I just want to finish the game. Let me just get someone to help me.
Yeah, that was me with the rum fight. And I didn't, when I was playing through Bloodborne, I didn't, I actually had a pretty weak internet connection at the time. So I didn't use any of that kind of in-game, help stuff. And I was on that fight for a very long time, a very long time. And it was crushing. Every time I turned on my PS4, I felt like there was this huge task that I had to get through. And all that I met with is the kind of past trauma of the last, 10, 15 times I turned on my PlayStation 4. I'm like, yo, I just want to feel some light at the end of the tunnel, man.
Yeah.
How must I feel this dread as soon as I turn it on? But that is the quintessential part of that experience.
Yeah.
That feeling of existential dread.
Yeah.
That cosmic horror. That's baked into the core mechanics of the game, the gameplay, and so too here in Sekiro. So.
Do you know what is interesting for me is people forget that the odds are stacked against you. It is whatever you want to call it, 100 to 1 that you will lose the fight against those bosses. They've got more damage, more HP. They've got, like, the difference is you only have to beat them once.
Yeah.
That's the one thing, like, people forget. It's a mechanic someone explained to me once about, in cricket, that, you know, the batsman can be knocking a bowler out the park every single ball, but the batsman only has to make one mistake.
Yeah.
And the bowler
just has one wicket.
That's it. And then you're done. So the bowler can make mistake after mistake after mistake, and, you know, if the captain still lets him continue to bowl, he only has to get one ball right, and the batsman has to make one mistake for it to be all over.
Yeah.
It's done. Boss is done. You don't have to play the guy again until you do new game plus. But it's essentially the odds are stacked in your favor in that sense.
Mm.
He's only got the same amount of moves every time. Once you learn what those are and how to counter them. That what is interesting for me was that how I know myself enough that if I'm given that crutch or that get out of jail, I will use it. That's
yeah.
And people are saying that, oh, give us the easy mode or give us the assistance because, you know, if it's your weakness as a person to want to use that, yeah, I'm sorry that's my weakness. I don't want to know that I can just switch difficulty modes. I hate when certain games you die a couple of times and it goes, do you want to switch to easy mode? And you're like, no, I want
like
to finish this game.
Like in Metal Gear, here, do you want the embarrassing, like, chicken head?
Oh, does it have that?
Yeah, so
oh,
if you
die
enough times, they put a fucking chicken head on
you. No.
So you look like, you know.
Like the dunce caps.
Yeah,
it?
The dunce cap, they put it on you, man. And then, like, enemies don't see you and you get through the area.
You're kidding, they don't see
you.
Yeah,
if you die enough times from a certain encounter,
yeah.
Like, then...
chicken head and then you're invisible.
Chicken head and you're invisible. Cool, go for it, man. Just enjoy.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
yeah.
But that all adds to the stigma of, you know, like easy mode. Does it say that I'm a worse player because of it, you know,
yeah.
Where I could have been playing, you know, Path of Exile, like the hardcore experience for the past, like, you know,
three
years.
You're good at that game, but you're not
you know,
good at this game.
Good at that game where when you die, you lose all your progress.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, different when it comes to something like Bloodborne, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way when I get into a driving sim or play FIFA. Like, I'm terrible at those games. And you want to go, like... As soon as you're done getting your ass handed to you, you want to go, oh, can we play anything else so that I can just like, beat you at something? You know?
Exactly. But like somehow it says something negative about you. You know, when I played through Witcher 3 a number of times and
yeah.
I was doing my last New Game Plus playthrough. So I finished it on Death March on my first playthrough. My second playthrough, I wanted to do New Game Plus, but I didn't want to take it as seriously because I got all my trophies
yeah.
and shit. So... I was still playing on Death March as much as I could, but as soon as I felt like it was a bit intense or... First of all, the load times in the game are crashing.
Yeah.
So, like, every time you die, like, I have to, like, go up, you
go
know...
Go make some coffee.
Write
yeah.
a novel.
Yeah.
So I would scale down the difficulty when it came to certain parts of the game, like bosses and so
yeah.
on, just to kind of get through that
yeah, yeah,
part
yeah.
to the next part. I didn't feel bad about it because I felt like, well, I already did this boss on the hardest difficulty
yeah.
in my first playthrough. So, you know, I've got that,
yeah.
that badge.
It's weird that one has to, like... almost
validate
yeah.
for
yourself
like well
like,
I've done it before so
it's okay is it okay it's okay yeah and so but the thing with Witch as well was because a lot of the bosses were unlocked I guess by their weaknesses so you're supposed to do the research and all that sort of stuff if you go on the wiki or you go online someone's done the research go this guy is tragically you know weak to fire and you go okay cool then fire herb ignis whatever and you're done.
Yeah.
Whereas and you almost make it a trivial experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like on later playthroughs, same thing. You're just going, oh, I can go through all of this and do it like the real way, or I can go get that spell that I shouldn't have at this part of the game. I'm gonna go get that first so that I make this guy an absolute walk in the park. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm all for accessibility. I'm all for like more people getting to play games, but you know, it's also about artistic expression. If they want their game to be
yeah.
difficult. A lot of people are saying, yeah, it's limiting their player base.
Tell
that to the sales numbers. They sold
yeah.
2 million units for a game that's supposedly niche and all that sort of stuff. It's like one of the
yeah.
top-selling AAA titles of...
So what? From are going to sell games, dude. They're going to
yeah.
sell games. They're not worried about their sales at all. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember when the guys were talking about when Sony came to them saying, we want a From Software exclusive. And all they wanted was a launch date, like a 2015 launch date for Bloodborne, and it needs to get a Metacritic score of 90. That was their only stipulation.
Yeah.
I didn't care how much it sold. It just needed to be critically
yep.
acclaimed and launched by 2015. And they're like, sweet, we can do this. Like, that
yep.
was all they
there
had to
go.
Do. And so it's great that they are, going back to our Resident Evil thing, that there are studios that are still allowed to go, we're going to make games for a core focus group as
yes.
opposed to, let's make this... Because then it just becomes every other game. I guess that's one of the big arguments. It just becomes... Not all games are for all people.
Yeah, and I mean, this kind of like sort of comes back to where we were with, you know, in those phases of Resident Evil with like kind of with
4, 5, 6.
Yeah, 4, 5, 6, zero, when they like went towards like this action genre, and yeah, a lot of games during that time period were that action genre.
And
we see these kind of shifts
as well, like shifted.
Yeah,
to,
we
like
see these shifts
game
in the industry going back and forth. You know, last year, the year before, like everyone has to have an open world game.
Yeah, oh,
you know, now you have to have an online store, microtransactions.
Yeah.
You know, DMC5, it sort of feels like a tacked on thing that doesn't really,
like, make a game, and then like almost the marketer guys, yeah, but how are you gonna sell loot boxes? Okay, well, I guess
you exactly. You know, you just gotta like check these boxes now.
Yeah.
And I like that there are still titles out there that don't feel the need to kind of fit into any checklist. They can be their own personality, their own identity. And at the end of the day, yeah, it's creative expression. And part of that creative expression is choosing whether to put in different difficulty modes.
Yeah, 100%. One interesting theory, the From Software difficulty thing has been around since Demon's Souls days. Like,
yeah,
they are difficult games. But this argument about accessibility, you might say, oh, it's just like such a 2019 argument. But it's interesting that it came up, the one publisher change, Activision took over. And so you go, has this all just been a very well-crafted PR story? Because you go, Activision go, it's a pretty niche game. How are we going to get people talking, selling, you know, to sell this game? What we'll do is we'll start a discussion about, should these games be core or should they be accessible and easy to everyone? And all of a sudden, everyone just rolls with it because
everyone's talking about it.
I don't know. Maybe I need my tinfoil hat. Yeah, but like,
I'm
conspiracy theorist, but it's like
good old fashioned tinfoil hat discussion.
It's interesting because I mean, like,
yeah,
they
are
very good at PR. Let's be honest. You don't become the monolith that you are without, you know, being really, really good at like coaxing discussions and all that. It just feels that it sprang out of nowhere. It was like, suddenly Sekiro needs to have an easy mode. We haven't had this discussion on Bloodborne or
ever. No.
It just was taken. From Software games are hard, deal with it. Get good was the meme. You know, like,
yeah,
now it's like Sekiro, get good or bitch about it because it doesn't hold your hand. Like, when all of a sudden did this happen? I don't know if that's, you know, are you biting?
No, I am definitely. Definitely biting. I wouldn't know what to really add to that though. Because it is, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a theory. This is just kind of what people are talking about in the moment and sort of created a nice big old wave in the last in the last couple of days on YouTube and articles and such.
I think the new thing that everyone's kind of speculating about is obviously the PS5.
Yeah.
Always weird. Leak? I'm holding air quotes at the moment. Like, leak or data mine or like...
Yeah, no, it wasn't exactly a leak. It was actually it was an article on Wired Mag.
Yeah.
It was an exclusive by Peter Rubin. He interviewed the Sony PS4 lead architect, Mark Cerny. And he just dropped a bunch of info on the new console. It's coming
out. Wait, the guy who works at Sony's surname is Sony.
Cerny.
Cerny. I'm about to say, no, come on,
Mark Cerny. So, yeah, he dropped quite a bit of info. A lot of it was very very technical, a lot of stuff that's, you know... I did a bit of research around, like, the different components that he spoke about and the, you know, the different sort of rendering techniques that they're incorporating into the system. At the same time, it's all really, like, jargon. We don't know what the model's going to look like. It wasn't an official sort of announcement, but it was an information dump from one of the lead architects who worked on the PS4. He worked on PS3 and 2 as well, I believe.
Okay.
So what he said was it would have new AMD Ryzen 3000 and their sort of the new AMD Navi GPU, which supports ray tracing, which is kind of like new tech. It's not exactly new technology, but at the moment it's
talking about it at the moment.
At the moment it's only really reserved for kind of like big budget, like Hollywood blockbusters. Like, ray tracing would be a system, let's say, used in the CGI of like Avengers Endgame, for instance, right? It's just like it's an image rendering technique that kind of simulates lighting in a virtual space.
Okay.
So the designers won't necessarily have to put shadows everywhere. They just kind of put the light sources
and then the
system itself like figures it out. So it's kind of like these new systems are automating a lot of the stuff that that game designers would have to normally spend man hour and program, which just kind of means that it would open up more options for different areas of focus in the development timeline, which means I could probably put more effort into story, into
mechanics. Other things, or other graphical.
Other graphical things, details. So is that a few other kind of like tidbits, 8K resolution.
Yeah, like we haven't even gotten to 4K, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, 8K resolution, 3D audio, so just a lot more nuance and detail there.
A lot of people are saying that it's not a true console upgrade. Like it's not a true, if you look at the gap between PS2 to 3, 3 to 4, it feels more like a...
Like an upgrade, like the Pro,
like the Pro 2.
So some people are saying that. Yeah. And this journalist apparently said that when he was having this meeting, this interview with these execs, none of them referred to the console as the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, they just called it the new console
They called it the next-gen console.
Yeah, okay.
So they're all kind of blanketly using this term next-gen as I think as a PR, I guess part of the PR, but also I guess how you kind of mentally align your design team, because if that's the kind of language you're using in the office, you're talking about next gen, you know, all the time, that's how you're thinking about it and kind of where the design effort is focused. They really do believe that this is going to be an entry for totally next gen technology. So far we know that sort of Sony has had a comfortable space as kind of industry leader over the past few years with the other consoles sort of playing catch up to them, particularly Xbox and Microsoft. And they really seem to believe that they're going to land on something new first.
Yeah, okay. So you think sometimes it's a bit of a timing issue more than anything. Like it's a case of you've got the two giants from the console in the console wars. You know, it feels like Nintendo's playing their own game. But you've got Xbox Go One X. They don't do a full console upgrade. Sony are now, let's be honest, lagging in terms of actual computational power, and so it's a case now of, you know, almost a timing window. It does feel like as a console generation, it's been quite short. If you compare, like, I mean, PS2 was around for literally ever.
Sure. Yeah.
PS3 a long time. Then PS4 came. It seems like a pretty short time.
2014.
End of 2014 into 2015. Because I remember getting Bloodborne when I got my console, and the PS4 hadn't been out for very long when I got it. I mean, that was March, I think, of 2015.
Yeah, so I got my console in 2016.
Yeah.
So what I do know is
that 5 years is not unheard of, but it is short.
Yeah, like, it's not. So what I do think they're looking at doing is having an overlap between, they still want to push PS4 sales.
Yeah. Look, they did announce two big things for me was it's still got a disc.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are going, okay, finally, this is a discless generation. Actually, screw all of, you know, African physical distribution. And I think chatting to some of the local distributors, they're going, okay, cool, we have a job for at least one more console cycle, because once it goes full digital, like, I mean, how do the local distributors survive?
I don't think the world's ready for full digital yet. And Yves Guillermo, CEO at Ubisoft, and a couple of those cats seem to believe that that streaming is going to be a big thing in the future,
okay,
right?
Yeah,
video game streaming. Same with Google and their new
Stadia.
Stadia announcement. But like the rest of the world isn't really there. Like I got a 10 meg line. I don't have the bandwidth for like streaming my games.
Or the cap.
Like,
I mean, geez.
Or the cap. Yeah, totally. So, you know, I think there definitely is a space that needs to have like a firm foot on it.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to physical copy games, and I'm glad that they're speaking about next generation and still having that be part of the conversation.
Yeah. The other thing that they mentioned was quite cool, besides that it's still disc, not discless, that it will have a disc drive, is the fact that it's confirmed will be PS4 backwards compatible.
Yeah, backwards
all your PS4
compatible
games will work on a PS5. I think, let's be honest, guys are still very much aware that the sharing and console secondhand sales, like disc sales, are still a huge, I know they want a piece of it, but they know that that's part of what gamers do. That games are expensive. I buy this, you buy this, we play it, we swap. It's part of gaming culture.
So let's think about this. Okay, when I was thinking about the PS5, I'm like thinking, you know, how much better can graphics actually get?
Yeah.
You know, and until it's like super real. I mean,
sure, we're getting to diminishing returns,
yeah, because I mean, already there's so much detail in a lot of the graphics of these games that we're playing now, you know, facial detail and pores, you know, hairs on the skin.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting towards the level where they're putting technology into our consoles that they're using in these Hollywood blockbusters.
Yeah.
That's kind of what they're going for. You know, we're getting like Thanos level detail here. But at the same time, it's like, you know, thinking of it retrospectively, like when I was a kid playing PS1, PS2, I was like, whoa, these graphics are mad,
look
bro.
At the triangles and
look at these huge, like, diamond-shaped heads. Wow, I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, I don't feel like we're going to get to a stage where we feel that way about, like, the PS4 looking back. Sure, there are a couple of games that looked a bit jank at the start.
I want to agree with you, but...
It's gotten so much better.
I want to agree with you just on the fact that, like, you look at games now and you go, this cannot be more real. But I know that I felt that way 10 years ago. And my go-to example was always Diablo 3 was about to come out. And I go, I'm going to play Diablo 2. And I didn't get past the second act. John, it's the desert, which looks shitty anyway. But it was like, because screens have gotten bigger, but resolutions didn't. So you're playing 640 by 480 on this 24-inch, and you're like, oh, this vomit of pixels is attacking that vomit of pixels. And it's just like, it was terrible. And so my nostalgia, it was almost better to protect my memory of Diablo 2 and go, that was a good game and I loved it. But if I play it again, it will look like I'm playing on a dot matrix freaking calculator.
Yeah.
Like, I'd much rather just like leave it back in the memory banks. So I want to believe you because I look at that stuff and it looks great. Mm. But the same with movies. I mean, I watched the Matrix movies again and I go, some of the CG is
terrible. It's like dog shit, yeah.
Some of the fights where Neo's flying and that sort of stuff is bad.
And it's almost weird because, like, we don't know... Like, at the time, we're not exposed to anything
better.
So we just think that this is so good. And I'm wondering if, like, we have that veil over our eyes.
We have reached the pinnacle. We are at singularity level of 3D graphics. And then you realize, no, it's like... This is kindergarten. There's so much way to go.
So we've already seen like a huge progression in terms of the quality of kind of graphics capabilities that people are managing to pull out of the console, out of the PS4, from like 2014 up until now, right, in the last 4 years. Let's say a game like Witcher 3 still holds up quite well, but at the same time, you know, when you look the camera down at the ground, you can see the texture tiles, you can see that that plants are, you know, that... It's like that flat piece of paper.
2D that's made to look 3D.
Yes,
you know, like.
And like the illusion works, and I get it. And those same techniques are still being used now in, you know, games like AC Origins, where everything in that game looked great. The water design looked great. It looked so lush. When you zoom in on those plants, it's exactly the same technique that they're using.
Because you got to save memory,
So you got to save memory. So I guess going into the new generation, it's giving developers the tool set in order for them to create those... like Avengers Endgame, like moments with that hardware.
Do you think any of this, the console timing has been accelerated by moves like the Google Stadia announcement? Because basically they're going, screw new consoles. With Stadia, it doesn't matter. You need a screen. You can basically play all these games as the latest tech, whatever, on, you know, an iPad or your phone.
So yeah, so I think that's interesting. So when Google Stadia launched, I think I heard that they're also going to be at E3, are they not?
I'm not sure. I know Sony are visibly absent. Yeah.
Sony are visibly absent. I don't think that that Google's announcement would have had any bearing on Sony's timeline. I mean,
okay.
They're like they're
you run your own race.
They're Japanese shinobi dog. Like, you know, they've been sharpening their blade like for the last four
Fair
years,
enough,
bro.
Yeah.
You know, they're about to like, you know, go for the kill shot. Arigato gozaimasu. You know, like. They pulled out. They've got their timeline. They've, you know, a bit of data here. I don't think they seem too phased about what's coming out now. Anyway, I think at the end of the day, they're like, okay, we're getting the conversation started slowly around PS5. You know, when we come with our own conference later in the year, it is this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, later in the year, I'm pretty sure they're going to announce PlayStation 5 fully and
I reckon
have some demos
for Christmas 2020 type thing. Where you'll also probably have your big titles launching. Like, it'd be good timing for a God of War sequel.
Yeah.
It'd probably be good time for an Uncharted sequel. So all your big Sony IPs would be probably primed to launch on PS5.
Good time for, I think, Last of Us Part 2 and maybe Horizon Zero Dawn sequel as well.
You think Last of Us will push into the new console?
I believe they will.
Because they're supposed to launch this year. We haven't heard a thing.
I think it's... No, you're right. We haven't heard very much. I feel like it's going to be... like a PS5 exclusive as well. Probably launched alongside.
Remember the first one timed it quite late in the PS3's history.
Yeah.
Because they did the remaster for PS4.
And then it spilled over.
So it might be a similar type thing where it's one of those. Remember, if they're supporting the old console in inverted commas, it's like they're still going to be launch titles available on the old console. It's always at that time where they're eking out the very juiciest stuff out of the console. Guys have been developing on it for 5 years. They really know how to maximize what the console can do. And that's always been a key argument for, you know, guys go the PC master race. And like, how can they expect guys to get the graphics that they get out of consoles? When they reveal the specs and guys are going, that's not even that hardcore a PC.
Yeah.
And you're going to expect to launch this like in a year's time and make it last for 5 years and do the things that you want it to do. And one of the key things is optimization. Yeah. These guys will program all the games, develop all the games on this hardware, and they'll know how to like eke out the last kind of drops of resource that the thing has. And yeah, it takes a couple of years, and we see the launch titles are great, but you compare them to the titles that launch, you know, towards the end of a console's life cycle. It's incredible what they can do. But a lot of that is the optimization that these developers have because they're just using one console. It's not a port
I mean, it's interesting because I think we'll probably also see games like Death Stranding and Cyberpunk releasing as, alongside the PS5 as well.
You reckon?
Yeah.
You don't think they'll come before that?
Death Stranding, I think, is aiming for 2020. I'm pretty sure they're going to have a nice big presentation at and I'm pretty sure that Sony wants it in their hat for their like PS5 launch.
Because it's difficult to launch a console.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be available on both consoles, but it's going to be part of the PS5 marketing campaign. Definitely.
Because it is difficult to launch a new console without titles. Really, really sexy titles. And to be honest, exclusives.
Yeah.
Because like, if you can still play it on PS4, then you probably will. And so they need to launch with titles that go like, you're only playable on
PS5.
People
are like, I have this PS4. Like, we still don't know what the price point is going to be for PS5. You know, people who have shelled out in the last couple of years on a new console probably bought like a Pro.
Yeah.
Maybe sold their original PS4.
One of the things that's holding me back from buying a Pro is the fact that I know the 5 is coming probably within a year. Because you're like, to shell out, $7,000 on a Pro now, to probably pay $7,500-$8,000 for a PS5 within a year. Yeah, it seems a bit. But going on to the Google Stadia thing.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on the concept? I mean, streaming tech, it's an interesting place to play. I think they've keyed on into some sort of market of going, you know, people don't want to continuously upgrade. They don't want to have $60,000 PCs. They want to be able to play and stream wherever they are. They obviously are never going to get the esports market because of the input lag that's just inherent with that. My key thing, though, is I keep going back to, I think it was a tweet by Cliffy B, who went, who is the Venn diagram of the target market? Because you're going in one circle will be people with bleeding edge internet. Because like only people with like at least, 50 meg lines can even hope to play like quality sort of. And then also the stability. So you've got to be in a place that like the line is always up. So you've got bleeding edge in one circle, bleeding edge internet. Then the other circle is people who have unlimited cap. Because if you have any kind of cap, you know, you're just going to run through it in minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are two circles overlap. Then the other one is going, who can't afford a console or a high-end PC?
But is also within these other circles.
Who are these people?
I know, it's weird. Because when you ask me now, like, how I feel about Google Stadia, you know, when it was announced the other week, a couple of friends, you know, tweeting me, mentioning, like, Tim, Google Stadia. You know, personally, I was like, cool story, bro.
Yeah. But if I have a console, I'll play on console.
Yeah, I was like, cool story, bro. I don't think that this is...
a console killer.
No, I don't think it's a console killer. I don't think it was actually market. I don't feel like it spoke to me.
Yeah.
I don't feel like...
So who
I was
does
like,
it speak to?
This is a cool idea. I don't feel like it's speaking to me. I don't feel like I'm your audience.
But who is the audience? That's what I want
to
know.
I like
it's
to...
Like, it's this tiny little Venn diagram.
I like to watch the story develop.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that Google's a player in the space now. Mm. I think it's cool just adding more competition.
Yeah.
Because that just is just healthy for the console environment, for the gaming industry in general. More innovation. But at the same time, I'm like, this doesn't relate to me.
Yeah.
It's unrelatable
content.
Okay,
so I'll ask you again. Who do you speculate is the people it relates to?
I have no idea.
Because unfortunately, I hang around mostly with gamers and they're going, meh. Like, if I have a console, I'd rather play on console. If I have a PC, I'd rather play on PC. It's almost the same argument as when people go, cool, you can play this game normally or in VR. Then you're going, VR is great when it's a VR exclusive built for VR. But when you've taken a game and gone, you could play in VR, I'm like, it's more comfortable playing with a controller because motion control is difficult. Like, it's, I don't want to play an 80-hour game like Skyrim and have to, like, motion control every attack.
Yeah, doing, like, parkour in your fucking living room.
Exactly.
No, the thing is also, like, I see Google Stadia as, like an innovation experiment, the same way I see, like, self-driving cars. That's how I look at it. I'm like, it's an experiment. It's cool. I'm glad people are working on it.
I think self-driving cars have got more of a target market.
Like I'm
people
glad
want people, to do work while they drive.
I'm glad it's part of the conversation. People are working on it, but like unrelatable content. Yeah. Like,
and to be fair, if anyone's got the money to bankroll and experiment, it's going to be Google.
It's going to be Google, yeah. I mean, they've played around in Google are always known for playing around with things that people think are kind of like off on the wayside, you know, like Google Glass or whatever.
Yeah.
They've been messing around with these innovations for a long time. Whether it proves profitable or not has no bearing on their actual brand. The fact that they are innovating in the space in the first place.
Have you seen, there's a website, I think Google Killed It or something like that. It's basically all their projects that they've killed or sub-companies that they've bought out, whatever. And it's as long as anything. You just scroll. Some of them are their own stuff, like Google Plus, whatever, which like started, killed, whatever. But like the amount of things they just experiment with, they just play around. And so maybe it is just a kind of thought experiment into the streaming world. I can't see the feasibility, you know, how they get over that issue of going, I'm in my living room and I'm playing this game and it's like the internet drops. I can still play my console.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, or I'm in this kind of FPS battle with someone and now I'm worried about ping because of, you know, he's playing on console and I'm playing. The only way I see this working is if somehow they get a massive coup and they get a publisher of the level of like a Santa Monica or like a Naughty Dog to make an exclusive game for Stadia. That's the only way I see people going like, shit, I'll sign up for a Stadia, you know, kind of subscription or however the model works if I'm getting to play a game that I can't get anywhere else. Like,
anywhere else.
Legitimately, the only way to play it is on Stadia.
Yeah, the thing is, I also see some issues around Stadia in that... I lost that one.
I also see issues, and I'm going to leave
it. I also see issues with Stadia.
But
no, okay, no, I definitely remember.
You remember it, popped
in. Yeah. So it's they aren't the first people to talk about and consider... like game streaming. I know a lot of the big wigs are talking about that. They're researching it. It's part of their portfolio.
I saw
in terms
a tech
of,
demo for one called Cloud Gaming like over a year ago. A Singapore-based company was doing pretty much the same thing.
But they are the first people to package and market it.
At this level right now.
You know, as the first sort of market entry. You know, Ubisoft aren't coming out with like, you know, their new roster of... Oh, wait. No, they are. They're partnered with Stadia, aren't they?
Yeah. They showed the... Assassin's Creed.
So I guess it's they're decided that they're going to be the market leader when it comes to game streaming, and if they get a bunch of their trademarks down first, we might see you know, bigger companies and publishers having to go through them in order to have their games on a streaming platform.
Maybe. Do you think perhaps it's like I mean I'm thinking out loud here, but like I've discussed before with people about the three ways to grow any category. So gaming or ice cream or whatever category you want to grow. You either grow penetration, as in you get more users. You grow consumption, as in you get the people who are using your product to use more of your product. Or you get people to uptrade, buy a more expensive product. That's how you grow any category to make more money. And so you go, we're getting to the stage now where how do you really uptrade people anymore? How do you get them to consume more? If they're spending 10 hours a day, I mean a week gaming, they're spending 10 hours a week. You can't get them to game more. You also can't really get them to uptrade. I mean, what you can do is get them people from playing free-to-play games to now playing, you know, buying titles. But games like Fortnite and Apex and that are killing that model. Like, people always have something free to play, you know? So the one thing is, like, how do you get non-gamers to game? And this might be that model. I mean, it's... If you're a tech savvy, you've got good internet and you've got unlimited cap, but you're not a gamer, this is a pretty low cost way of getting involved in playing high level games.
But let's say then, like, you say, okay, well, what are the different ways people are eating ice cream? What if we create this thing called an ice cream cone and then we patent it?
Yeah.
Now, every other player in the industry who wants to put their ice cream in a cone has to go knock on your front door and give you money to do it. So I feel like that is kind of where Google might be.
So might like be, a new might, method might of distribution sort of thing. Like,
exactly.
And that's what I'm saying. Like the big thing will be the coup of getting a title that is only available, you know, on Stadia. Because until then, people are just going to go, if I can play the latest God of War on my console or Stadia, then I'm going to play on console because it's a better experience. You know, until that experience level is at the same, you know, kind of level.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the major issue. I mean, people who were at the tech demo at the GDC in San Francisco.
Yes, yes.
They were going, it was good. There was no like massive, like noticeable lag. Like there was the 160ms like input lag that you normally get. But like, can you imagine what the internet is like at San Francisco, first of all, at a GDC conference?
Yeah.
It's like God tier.
But it's
you
also...
take that home, you're going like loading screen for like the menus, you know?
Yeah, but it's also then it's like, cool, Assassin's Creed Origins. Look, I played this game in 2016, guys.
Yeah, like, fair enough. Like, show me something new, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where it comes back to these kind of exclusive
Doom,
titles.
I think Doom Eternal, or the latest one. So they're that available, which is new, but...
But speaking of exclusives...
Yeah.
Like, we got the Epic Games Store sort of buying up exclusives around.
That's
you saying that an important strategy for Google Stadia will be to get exclusive. At what point are we being pulled in too many directions here?
Yeah, well, you've got to like back your store, like almost pledge allegiance, you know, to one store. And
you know, you got your PlayStation, then you got, you know, all the different stores. You got your Steam, you got your Epic Games Store, you got, I don't know, EA Access.
Yeah.
Like going on over there. Like, at what point are we getting pulled in different directions by different people trying to like put their flag down and claim ground?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and at the same time, then you've got guys like, you know, Epic with Fortnite going, it doesn't matter where you are, you can play Fortnite. Like,
what I do think is happening, there's been so much backlash against games that are now announcing that they're coming to, they're exclusively Epic Games Stores.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, in the last, literally in the last month, a game will announce on the Epic Games Store, just dislike button. Just mash that dislike. Yeah, completely. Games that people have been excited for years, suddenly just turning on the developers once. It seems like it's created an entire shitstorm of like bad PR for people.
When they go exclusive.
When they go exclusive with Epic Games in particular. Particularly sometimes, you know, in the earlier development of the game, they'll say this will come to Steam.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like
and then change
2 weeks
ship.
Before
yeah,
launch,
yeah.
They change ship. So what I think Epic is doing is they must be giving these guys crazy deals.
Well, the one thing is that, I mean, just off the bat, I know you get a better developer rebate.
Yeah, the rebate cut.
So I think Steam's, whatever, 20% goes to Steam or something. Epic, it's less. You know, so they make less money by selling your games. So there's instantly better margin for you and you as a developer and your publisher going through
better margin.
Epic.
They're also giving them, I think, like a nice fat like developer check for development going down the line for DLC content.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
So they're getting like a big cash injection, big enough to I would assume to kind of like offset the kind of like sales that they might lose through going with this exclusive. Because even after all this PR, they seem to feel like this is a worthwhile deal.
Mm.
Like, even though your brand's being dragged through the mud online in the last, you know, couple of weeks or whatever, they still think this is a worthwhile deal.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, gamers are naturally kind of, like, toxic to change. You know, it's one of those weird things. So, you know, if you're going, oh, we're going to be Steam and available to everyone, then suddenly it's Epic. As a PC user, it means nothing to you. It literally means it's
means
opening
nothing.
Up a different, like,
different launcher.
That's about it. Everything else is exactly the same. So, you know, I don't understand the hate, but then again, I never understood review bombing. You know, where you just like, you love a game, but you decide to downvote it because of something else that the studio is doing on a different game. It's just like, that's the mindset of gamers. The one thing I wanted to chat to you before we run out of time was, you know, once again, Verticom is the leaks.
The leaks.
There's a supposed leak about
Horizon Zero Dawn.
Horizon Zero Dawn. Yeah, so you heard about it.
Yeah, no. It was on a Twitch stream, actually, at Star Wars Celebration. The actress who plays Iden Versio, what is her name now? Janine something, I can't pronounce her surname. She also plays Tatai in the Frozen Wilds.
Okay.
And she was like, I saw the video actually. She was talking to a fan who came up to her and said, "Oh my God, you know, thank you. You're so amazing. Like, you know, I fell in love with Horizon Zero Dawn because of you."
Okay.
And she goes, "Oh my gosh, you know, thank you. That's so cool. You know, sign your autograph. I can't wait for you to see the sequel. Like, you know, it's, I know so many secrets. You're gonna die. You're gonna die."
Yeah, say what?
And you just check the Twitch chat going like, "What?" So yeah, so she kind of did like a bit of that's the only info that we've got on that side.
Yeah.
Which is confirmation that she has been doing voice work on Horizon Zero Dawn sequel, which means it's probably, you know,
but to be fair, voice work is near the end of the production.
Near the end of the production timeline. And on their website, Guerrilla Games have advertised a position for a video editing intern, and one of their responsibilities will be marketing communication campaign for a new open world game. New epic open world game. So it looks like they're gearing up for a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
So they've probably done most of the production already using their engine.
And that was also one of those games that didn't have a massive PR cycle.
No.
I think it was the normal 1 year thing, as in announced at E3, shown at Gamescom, playable the year after. Like it was sort of the normal 1 year thing, as opposed to some of these teased 1 year, playable 3 years later, you know?
So my theory is that, you know, since they're, you know, in sort of the later stages of production, they're gearing up for a marketing campaign. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a trailer for it at E3 this year.
And playable by early next year.
Playable by early next year, yeah.
Awesome.
Sounds like.
Because that was one of my...
that was one of my highlights, man.
I
played it three times,
dude.
It's great.
Yeah, and I like when developers decide to go with new IPs. You know, it's just like, as exciting as it is for the next God of War, the next COD, the next FIFA, or whatever, it's like people are... I suppose they trust existing franchises.
Exactly.
I love it when the experiment of going with a new IP pays off. You know, and the only like downside for me with Horizon Zero Dawn is it launched a week before Zelda. And so despite being an easily over 90 game, was overshadowed by, you know, the behemoth that not only the Switch launched, but also Zelda was.
But you know, in a world now in 2019 where like open world games have been kind of like done to death.
And just padding.
I still feel like there is a market space for a game like Horizon Zero Dawn 2, which does open worlds really well, which is like dense, packed, very strong story. The thing that really stands out about that game to me, still to this day, one of my favorite combat systems in a PS4 game, the encounter design, like each dinosaur, the physics of the way that those things work are just
was distinct.
It was different to the way, like, you know, enemies feel in other games. Sometimes you'll just want to avoid encounters entirely because, like, I don't want to deal with that. You know,
I think for me, where open world games do well is just existing must be fun. And so I look at the Batman games and Spider-Man games, and like, just being Spider-Man was fun. Like, you could just swing around and do parkour, and like, that was fun. You know, Batman, same thing. Same thing with, you know, being Aloy or Eloy or however you want to pronounce it. Like just being in that world is fun. And the other thing was that it must feel like the world exists without you.
Yeah.
You know, it mustn't feel like you're this sort of like guiding light and the world kind of like pops into and out of existence depending on when you're there. It felt always that like, if there's that big red maw, giant Tyrannosaurus thing, whatever, it's doing its thing. It doesn't give two shits about me. You know, if I interact with it, that's my decision to like get involved in the world. If I decide not to, it's still going about its thing, doing its own thing, hunting whatever long claws or long jaws or whatever, long horns. That's the world is alive without you. And I think open worlds that do that, like you think of GTA, you think of Zelda, like the world exists without you. It doesn't need you. And so that's what makes it feel like you're part of something bigger.
So yeah, I definitely have more time for another Horizon Zero Dawn title. I'm keen to be thrown back into that world. You know, see what new things are happening with the characters, what kind of like new enemy types they've invented, you know, deepening the lore. And yeah.
Awesome.
So for that.
We're running close on the hour. I know we could chat about this sort of topic forever, but I think let's try and keep it tight with this podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. Those listening in, voyeuristically to easily the best podcast, ethical or not. Cynical ethical podcast. We'll come up with a name over the next couple of weeks. But thanks for listening in. Obviously, I'll check this up on all good podcast stations. So wherever you're listening from, please do send us a message on my Twitter is @TheGarethWoods. Tim is on
@TimitaFish.
at Tim and a Fish. And yeah, just message us, let us know if there's something you want to chat about. We'll be scouring the interwebs for all sorts of juicy stories and quote-unquote leaks to talk about, but we will be back next week with some more exciting gaming news. Until then, some sort of sign-off, which we need to come up with.
Adios.
Adios for now. Cheers.